From roommates to co-hosts, this is the BS Sports Show with Brendan Azoff and Stefan Wozner. Your go-to destination for New York hockey and NHL news. And now it's time to drop the puck. Here are your hosts, Brendan Azoff and Stefan Wozner.
Welcome to the BS Sports Show, everybody. The last BS Sports Show, I should say. I'm Brendan Azoff. With me, as always, is Stefan Wozner. And today's going to be a great show because we got hockey news to talk about. We've been speculating over the last three episodes, but now we finally have some concrete information, including a huge offside change. But before we dive too much into that, Stefan, how you doing? I know you got a little paintball adventure you want to talk to us about today.
Yeah, so listen. So first off, you're doing good, Brendan? Everything's good?
I'm doing great.
All right, let me get to my story then before I forget it. So worked 7 days last week, and my friends are like, okay, let's go paintballing Sunday morning. I'm like, what time? 8 a.m., picking up 8 a.m. I said, okay, fine, I'll go. Hopefully it's not too cold. I get there, and I'm not old by any means, but I am still in pain from Sunday. My body just was not ready. I'm diving around in the snow. I got a couple of headshots, which I was very proud of, but Brendan, first rule of thumb is if you're good at Call of Duty, that has no implications if you're good at paintball or anything else in the outside world. So that being said, I should have stretched. I didn't, but let's get into this unreal news that we got. First off, season's coming back officially the 13th, but we have a lot to dive into.
We really do. And I mean, I could have told you before you went to paintball that Call of Duty is not an indication of how well you will do. And yes, that stuff hurts, but it's a really good time. So I'm sure you had fun doing it.
Well, and it wasn't that bad. I haven't gotten paintballing in like 10 years, but I got, you know, I did well. I did well enough.
Any battle scars from it?
A huge well right here. I took one right off the head and I just got stunned. It brought me flashbacks, Brendan, to playing Farmingdale.
Kid got a concussion from a plastic puck, but that's a story for another day. So to kick things off, I guess, you know, the big news is the NHL, NHLPA officially agreed to a season. They released a couple of key dates, including the postseason start, which is May 11th. January 13th is the official start date. And I know after we go over the dates, we're going to talk about who we think the opening night matchups may or may not be. April 12th is the trade deadline. We had talked about this last week. We were worried about when this might be. So a month and less than a month before the season ends, we're going to be seeing players move. And I assume that when it's eight games against your rivals, you're going to see a couple of players shift around. And I wonder how they're going to do that with COVID protocols as well.
I was going to say, can Canadian teams only trade with Canadian teams? It's going to be very interesting because they can't cross into Canada. If you're a team from the U.S. and you trade with a Canadian team, what are you, out for 2 weeks? No, you can't even go. So it's going to be rather interesting.
That's a great point. I don't think they could restrict that though, because you can't have a trade deadline if only Canadian teams, like, there's got to be some type of collusion that's going on there. So it should be a free market. But like you said, if they do trade to a Canadian team, what's that situation going to be like?
And if there's going to be a quarantine, it's going to be totally strategic of when people ask for trades, all that kind of stuff. Because you could get a player, but for 2 weeks while he's waiting to get into Canada, that player probably can't go to the other team until he clears. That's probably the fairest way I could think of. But April 12th is my dad's birthday, so trade deadline on that day. Hopefully the Islanders do something. You know, they don't usually do much on trade deadlines. Hopefully it's a good thing and not a bad thing. Again, the expansion draft coming up, this is big as well. But, you know, you talk about the dates. Biggest date, tomorrow we're getting the schedule, Brendan.
I mean, I'm excited. I love schedule release day.
Schedules are great. The problem is, you know, a lot of arenas are not housing fans. So you look at the schedule and go, okay, I want to go to that. I can't. But at the same time, don't you want to see when the Islanders-Rangers play eight times this year and make sure you mark it on your calendar and not have any plans with anyone?
Well, you just mentioned fans. Did you see in Dallas, they said that they're going to be having a couple of fans, and they based it off of their Stanley Cup final viewing party, which is pretty cool. And they said nobody wound up testing positive that they know of from that. And listen, it worked. They're going to keep the same type of distance. And I'm just happy that some games, now granted, we're on the East Coast, our division and the market games we'll be watching, we won't see fans. But it's good to see that some replays on like NHL Tonight will have a couple of people screaming and waving some towels in the background.
I mean, you talk to the players and, you know, especially Islander players, they were speaking and said, hey, we miss the fans back at home. But, you know, when it comes down to playing, they're just focused. They tune that stuff out. Unless they score a goal and look at the crowd, or you look at the opposing crowd and make fun. What was that player that got the middle finger once? I forgot who it was. Went to the corner. Carcillo.
Well, Carcillo got the middle finger, and I forgot who was. I think it was Andrew Ferentz on Boston put up the middle finger after scoring against Montreal. Middle finger is a common celebration in hockey.
No, I mean, the crowds make the sport. I mean, going to a hockey game is the best sporting event to go to, I think. Even if you don't like hockey, I've been to games with people that have never been to a hockey game, and they walk out going, wow, like, this is another level to everything else, the fast pace. But it's better to be safe than sorry. For Dallas, you know, they didn't get COVID. They lost the series, though. But at the end of the day, that little test worked. So they'll have fans, and the fans for Dallas are going to come out cheering because they got something to prove this year after getting so close. Now's the time to, you know, try to get back there. But there, I mean, it's going to be a crazy, crazy season. So, Brendan, for the Rangers, who do you think they open against?
I put this on Twitter. I think they're going to open against the Boston Bruins. I know Frank Saravalli put that out as a potential East clash for the opening night. I don't think that the Rangers are not going to play on the 13th just because of how big of a market they're in and the eagerness of the New York market to watch hockey again. And then Boston is a natural rival plus a big market as well. So to me, that's an ideal opening night matchup, and that's what I'm going to go with.
For the Islanders, there's, you know, everybody's a rival in this division pretty much. I think it's going to have to be the Flyers, though. You go to 7 games to go to the Eastern Conference Final. Islanders win. Let the bloodshed begin day one. There's going to be bloodshed throughout the whole entire division in every single matchup, but the Flyers and the Islanders hate each other. I hate the Flyers, and I would love to see that kickoff on the first night. Obviously, it won't be at the 13th, not a big enough market, the Islanders-wise, plus the Rangers we already talked about, probably a day or two later. But I think Flyers-Islanders, beautiful way to start the season off.
Yeah, and they had a postseason matchup, so, you know, that adds fuel to that fire, and I'd be all for watching that. I mean, every single game is going to be exciting, but opening night and opening night part two, you should say, about the 14th is going to be just a bunch of jubilation across the hockey markets. And before we continue, I want to say that at 6:20 Eastern time, we have Stephen Fogle coming on to talk about the New York Rangers prospects, the World Junior Championships, talk about some Islanders prospects as well. So stay tuned for that interview if you're interested in the World Juniors. I know he's going to have some good insight, especially on some key New York Rangers prospects.
So let's dive into some more news. So British Columbia and Ontario, the only two provinces refusing to sign a return to play agreement. So the league says if that's not signed, those Canadian teams can play in different provinces. At the end of the day, let's be on the same level here. It's Canada. I know there's different provinces, different rules, the same way states have different rules. But if you're playing in an all-Canadian division, this needs to be worked out like right now. There's not enough time to, you know, what if another province decides, oh, last minute, I don't really want them to play there. You have a major, major issue going on.
Well, the NHL released their policies, and the players aren't allowed to leave like where they're staying or their homes to go get stuff unless it's approved by the club. So with those policies in place and the fact that they're probably going to be tested every single day, it's not like they're going out anywhere besides the arena and spreading stuff into the communities or getting it in that way. And they travel privately all the time. So to me, I understand their precaution, but I think that it's just them playing a little hard and they want to make sure that the protocols are all secure before they actually say, okay, we're going to sign off on it. But I think it would have moved to the United States already had this really been an issue that the NHL thinks is going to play out.
Did you see the thing about the Devils today, by the way?
With what?
First team to have ads on their helmet.
Yeah, the NHL just instituted. The Capitals have Capital One on it now. It's only a matter of time. The revenue generation.
It's okay. I'm all for a small thing beyond the helmet. I don't really want to see what you see in soccer where you can't even see what the team name is. It's just the logo. Or an overseas in the European leagues where it's, I don't know, 20 to 30 on a jersey. I don't want that. But a small one on the helmet, everyone complained when the Yankees went with the Nike logo. And then when the season began, I didn't hear a word about it. So, I mean, it to me, it's all about making money. And especially with all the money lost this season, you can't say no to this. It's just complete foolishness to not do this right now.
Hey, first of all, somebody's paying for that, right? So the money that they've lost over the last year and a half, you're going to get a little bit back. And like you said with the Nike symbol on the Yankees jersey, the amount of cries from the Yankees fan base, oh, you can't tarnish that jersey. By the time Aaron Judge swung a bat opening day, nobody cared, right? Baseball was back, you're watching. And the same thing with hockey. Everyone's going to say, oh, maybe there shouldn't be ads on the helmet. There shouldn't be ads on the jersey. You put ads wherever you want. People are still going to watch the game. Now, I don't want to see the jerseys get polluted with advertisements, like you said. I think that they look clean the way they are. Maybe one under like the number plate towards the bottom where the fight strap is, put an ad there, sure. But to populate the whole jersey like you see overseas, don't do it. I'd rather them do the creases or the ice before they start doing all over the jerseys.
I'm fine with the ice. And one thing that we could point out is I don't hear one fan complain on TV when there's that fake ad that's put up on the glass.
No. Nope.
I've never heard one person. When I was younger, I used to think that was actually there, and then I
realized
nobody could see anything. But that's technically on the playing field, and nobody complains about that. That, oh, you can't, you know, if the puck hits that, you're gonna. Nobody cares. So at the end of the day, no one's gonna care. The league knows that, which is why they're doing it. Everyone's gonna be so happy that hockey's returning that they could put ads everywhere they want, besides all over the jerseys, and I would have zero problem.
So the big thing, though, right, that we have yet to talk about, we skipped it in the important dates, is that July 21st is the NHL expansion draft. But the division's officially set, the season officially set. It's time, right? This is the final season before we have a 32nd NHL team in Seattle, before they can do what Vegas did and start picking and negotiating trades. And now, they're not going to be as good as Vegas. I'm going to say that now. If I'm wrong, come the end of next year, you can take this video and show me, and I'll gladly admit my mistake, but teams are going to be extraordinarily precautious. They are not going to let Seattle take advantage of them like Vegas did.
The craziness is that, you know, Vegas made it seem like they weren't taking advantage of teams. Like the Islanders. The Islanders made a deal with Vegas. They would take JF Berube. But then Vegas said, okay, yeah, we'll take him. Won't take anybody else, whatever. Then they flipped JF Berube for draft pick. It's just crazy the way they didn't manipulate the teams, but it looked even off the bat. Like it looked like, okay, they're not going to steal a prize player from the Islanders. They're going to take a JF Berube, and then they got picks and everything like that. And it worked out well. But, you know, one thing for Vegas, which still blows my mind, is the fact that, yes, they had Marc-Andre Fleury. Besides that, it was second, third, and fourth liners they took.
We thought.
Well, I mean, they became – yeah, it turned out with trades and stuff. But, like, you had guys step up, too. Like, Carlson stepped up. Marjessault stepped up. These players went to the next level.
Did Carlson go from, what was it, 3 or 4 to 40? Right, I'm pretty sure he had 3 or 4 goals with Columbus the season before, and then in his first season with Vegas had 40 goals.
I'll look that up for you. I do believe that he exploded.
I mean, first of all, we talk about teams not letting Seattle take advantage of them. That's one thing, but there's still going to be a couple of gems. Now, is Seattle going to be able to get the same exact production that they got from all that Vegas's players that first year? Honestly, it's impossible, right? We've seen in NHL history expansion teams. Now, granted, there wasn't as much access that Seattle will have now, but come on, that's ridiculous. That big jump for Carlson, the defensive depth, the goaltender that they got. Like, is the best goaltender available right now going to be Braden Holtby?
That's not good.
Unless they go younger.
I mean, yeah, it depends. They also have the draft. You never know. But, you know, looking at the stats, Brendan, you are right. First off, let me just break it down. When he started in the NHL, 2014-2015 with Anaheim, he played in 18 games, 2 goals. Then he went to Columbus. He had 3 goals. That was it for that season. So he had 3 goals in total that whole year. First year full in Columbus, he had 9 goals. Second year, 6. 2017-2018 season with Vegas, 43 goals, 35 assists for 49 points.
Now, that's an explosion.
His production's never been like that since, 24 goals in 18-19-15 last year. But I mean, to have a year like that, your first year, get that contract.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And granted, now he's playing a couple of second line minutes now because they got Stone, Pacioretty. They added people to that roster. But I mean, that first year, he went from a third line guy in Columbus that wasn't really getting time. I'm pretty sure he was injured a little bit too. And all of a sudden, 40 goals. You're like, who's this guy? And he's got that great blonde flow flying all over the ice. It was really fun to watch, especially with the storyline of how Vegas started that season with the tragedy and the opening game. And I remember we were watching it together when they just absolutely trounced Arizona. So just an awesome storyline, but I do not think we're going to see the same thing with Seattle.
No, I can't see that again. The team knows, and Ron Francis is a world-class general manager, and they haven't been able to officially talk until this point was reached with the dates and everything, but you know he's been talking and figuring out what he wants to do, and he's going to learn from what – he's not going to carbon copy Vegas. He's going to take away from Vegas, because look at Vegas. Their best year was their first year, and not that they've taken a step back. But Ron Francis might look at that and go, okay, I might tweak this, tweak that. That way we have more success, you know, longer term. Of course, Vegas acquired players. But at the same time, they did so well their first year that it seemed like that was going to be their, wow, they're just going to be good for a while. And then, you know, each year, even though they still played well, it's quote unquote a step back. And can Vegas get back to that point anytime soon? So now, you know, going through that draft, it might be a little different. I just wanted to look back and see Marchessault's first season in Vegas. So he had 30 goals for Florida in 2016, 2017. And then Vegas, he had 27, and it's dropped off 25 and 22, but still a consistent score. And that's one of those guys that you look at it, and he wasn't a top player. He might have been playing top line minute for Florida, but he wasn't that superstar, quote unquote, yet.
No, Marchessault was one of the few players in that expansion draft, though, that you knew Vegas was going to jump on because he does have that goal-scoring ability. So he was one of the lesser surprises, I will say, even though nobody expected him to jump the way he did, especially with Carlson. But quickly, before we get to our guest, Henrik Lundqvist announces that he will be missing the entirety of the 2020-21 season with a heart condition, and it's just tough. I mean, for Rangers fans, we wanted to see him play. I mean, we wanted to, even though it wasn't going to be with the Rangers jersey, we still wanted to see Henrik Lundqvist suit up. It's a big loss for the league, let alone the Capitals. And we'll talk more about that loss after our guest. But Stefan, just quickly, as somebody who's watched him on the opposite side as a rival, what's that loss like for the league?
It's huge because you could see, I mean, it's sad because you see how many teams and players reached out. That just goes to show not just the type of competitor you are, but the person you are. You know, if he wasn't respected around the league, they might say, oh, I'm sorry, I wish you your best, you know, I wish you get better soon. But the amount of players, opposing players, nonetheless. And for a Capitals organization who, you know, they were hopeful that Lundqvist would play and maybe have a bounce back year like last year. But he spoke to the fans as if he was speaking right to our faces. And that's something that, you know, people have talked about how personable he is. But, you know, when he's talking about his life and taking the seat and Capital fans, I wish you nothing but the best. I mean, I feel like they felt that because I felt it. I not that I got emotional watching the video, but for a guy that's gone through a lot, I mean, being forced pretty much out of New York, signs with the Capitals, looking for, you know, it's got to be exciting for him, even though, you know, he'd rather stay a Ranger. He's playing for a new team. He's got shake off that rust. He's getting the nice pads, everything set up. He looked good. And then he's been saying he's been working out at the rink every single day. And it's unfortunate, but again, it's health first. Hopefully we'll see him back next year, but what a competitor he is. And if this is the end, it's been a hell of a career.
I don't think it could be the end. I think he's going to go out on top, and he's got to play one more time. He's just got that drive and competitive nature in him. But without further ado, it's time to introduce our guest. So we welcome to the show Stephen Fogel. Stephen, welcome. Better known by his Twitter name, StatBoy_Stephen. So welcome to the show.
Hello, guys. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure to have you on, and we'll just dive right into it. So Tarmo Runainen, and I'm hoping I'm saying his name correctly, headed to Rangers camp. You tweeted that he's your dark horse to make the team. So just quickly give some Rangers fans what they should expect from him, and why do you think he's a dark horse to make the squad?
Yeah. Pronunciation is tricky with some European names, but his last name is pronounced Reunanen, so...
That was close.
Yeah,
it's close. It's close. As long as people know who you're talking about, that's all that matters.
Exactly.
But yeah, Reunanen is a guy that the Rangers drafted in 2016, 4 years ago. They signed him to an entry-level contract last year, and he had a European assignment clause for year one, which he triggered to go back to Finland to play in Liga for Lukko. And he was one of the final cuts last year. He was close to, in my opinion, close to at least making the team as a seventh defenseman. And he has developed for another year. But what really stands out to me is when I spoke to him a few times, I interviewed him twice over the last 6 months, especially the last time back in, I think, September or October, we were talking about his upcoming season. And he told me that the Rangers and his agent, they were looking only into short-term loans, which to me at the time basically meant that the Rangers definitely want him coming over for training camp when the season is announced. And now that the season is announced, what we see is that he's in fact coming over. So he played in Mestis first on a short-term loan deal, and then he went to Liga. And on the left side, we have, you know, everything's wide open. Of course, we have Jack Johnson, Brandon Smith. Ryan Lindgren is, in my opinion, guaranteed a spot paired with Adam Fox. But the other two spots, of course, Smith and Johnson are veteran defensemen. But I wouldn't be surprised if Reunanen plays his way onto the team. Maybe not at first, maybe not straight out of camp, but throughout the season with a bigger taxi squad joining the team. He will be practicing with the team. And yeah, I really like what I've seen from him the last 2 years. after he was after he left TPS, the team that Kaapo Kakko played for as well. Yep. He has really developed into a solid defenseman in the Finnish league. And he might not be that high upside potential player that fans are raving about, like Nils Lundqvist or Keandre Miller or Braden Schneider. But he's a guy that if you get 200-300 games out of him on the third pairing, that's great value for where he was drafted.
Yeah, definitely. And Ryuninen, see, I'm getting better already. But he is a left shot. And like you said, that left side is in dire need of somebody to give a little jump start to it. And if he shows in camp that he's got the potential, why not give him the edge over somebody like a Johnson? I mean, you're not really losing much there, at least from what we've seen for over the last 3 years from Jack Johnson. But moving on to North American prospects, I know that there's one in particular you want to talk about, especially on the back end. But what about North American prospects should Ranger fans be excited about?
Well, the easy one, of course, is Lafreniere. Can we still consider him a prospect as a first overall pick?
Until he plays that first game, yeah.
Then Lafreniere is definitely one to get excited about. Yeah, I saw him last year at the World Juniors in the Czech Republic, and he was named MVP, and there was really no argument there. He was easily the best player in the tournament, and he was only 18 years old at the time. That was his, I think, his second World Juniors, because he also played at the one in Vancouver the year before. And he could have played this year if the Rangers would have allowed him to, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that has been discussed at length already. But yeah, Lafreniere is a guy that fans should get excited about. Based on 82 games, you should be able to expect 50, 60 points early on in his career. With the shortened season, I think 40 to 45 points would be a big success if we see that out of him. And then, of course, Braden Schneider on defense, who plays in the World Juniors for Canada. Personally, I wasn't really thrilled that we drafted Braden Schneider. It has nothing to do with Braden Schneider, just the fact that I felt we could have used someone in a different position to add to our prospect pool. You know, we could have gone for a center prospect instead of another defenseman. But then if you take a closer look at our prospect pool, we don't really have a right-handed defenseman behind Nils Lundqvist, aside from Hunter Skinner. So yeah, it's not a bad pick. It's just that I think they could have gone for a different position. But he's definitely an exciting prospect who probably should be playing in the AHL as soon as next year.
Speaking of Lundqvist, you know, how's he looked this season? We've had mixed reviews here in America about it, but he looks like he's having an up and down year thus far.
It depends on how you look at him. Of course, last year was his breakout season, where he set the record for points by a teenage defenseman. And he didn't just break the record, he destroyed the record. And I was tracking that all season. It was a lot of fun to update that every week. And this year, they put him in a different role. They put him on the second pairing in more of a shutdown role with a different guy next to him. Last year, he played with Gustafsson, who is considered like the best defenseman in the SHL, the Swedish league, or at least top three defenseman. So in a slightly different role this season, he was off to a slow start production-wise, but defensively, I think he has been better this season than he was last season. And I've always said that with Nils Lundqvist, the production is probably his fourth or fifth most important asset. And now I think he has 10 points in the last 11 games. So the production now is you know, slowly coming up as well. But he's had a good season. Unfortunately, he was cut from the national team because of COVID-19. I think he tested positive. Otherwise, he would have played for the national team again. But the fact that Nils Lundqvist last season at age 19 played for the men's national team, the Swedish men's national team, tells you all you need to know about him. And if it wasn't for the pandemic, he would have been on an entry-level contract playing in New York or in Hartford right now. I know some Ranger fans are a bit worried that, you know, will he sign, will he not sign? But I've spoken to him several times. You know, I talked to his grandpa from time to time. We're Facebook friends after we met up at some games.
Nice.
And everyone in his family, including Nils, is expecting him to play for the Rangers. There's really nothing to worry about. He's going to sign his entry-level contract once the current season's over. There's really nothing to worry about.
I mean, when you look at a team like the Rangers, it's such a proud Swedish pipeline there. You talk about Zibanejad now, Lundqvist, of course, and I see no doubt that he will come here as well. And when we talk about somebody like Nils Lundqvist, we know that the skill offensively is there. But I always look defensively, like you just mentioned, because we see players on the Rangers right now who are extraordinarily skilled offensively on the back end, but they need that type of guy that can also shut down another team. So I'm glad to hear that he's doing a little better on that side of the puck. And it's all been great news coming overseas, especially from us where we can't watch it. We just read about what we see over there. So moving on to another guy, this one from Finland, Levi Aaltonen. I think that one's better.
First name is Levi, but
Levi. See, America, it's Levi. Okay, so Levi. Yeah. All right, he was cut Levi from the Finnish squad, and I mean, looking from Rangers prospects, we haven't really seen a lot that got cut. So, was that deserved, or has he underperformed?
I was honestly a bit surprised he was even part of the preliminary roster for the Finnish under 20 team. And this is the problem when, you know, you go through a rebuild and you have a lot of picks and a lot of prospects early on really show a lot of, you know, a lot of talent and, you know, have great performances like Nils Lundqvist and Vitali Kravtsov and Zach Jones, of course, who plays in college in North America. When you have so many of those prospects that really, you know, week in, week out, give you something to be excited about, you start to expect it from everyone. Lauri Paajuniemi, who was a sixth-round pick in 2018, led his team in goals in the Finnish league last year, got a call-up for the national team, and you sort of start to expect it from everyone. But Levi Aaltonen, as I think it was a fifth-round pick in 2019, he just hasn't really made that next step yet. And last year, unfortunately, he missed out due to shoulder injury. I think last year he was closer to making the team than he was this year. And yeah, he hasn't really progressed the way I hoped he would, but yeah, there's still time. He's still young. He's only 19.
So, you know, in a shortened season, are the World Juniors more important than ever, given the fact that, you know, less players have less time to make, you know, show what they've got at training camp? So are the World Junior Championships just that more important?
I know the World Juniors is very important to fans mostly. And I think fans often overestimate how important the World Juniors actually is. At the end of the day, it's a junior tournament. Yes, it's the World Championships under 20. So you play against the best players in your age group. But for a guy like Lafreniere, for a guy like Kako or Jack Hughes, when you can play in the NHL or you can play in the World Juniors, the choice should be easy. The choice should be to play in the NHL, because professional hockey should always be ahead of any junior tournament. Now, over the years, the World Juniors has really, you know, grown into this spectacle that we all watch over the Christmas holidays and, you know, Christmas, New Year's, etc. And as fans, we always look forward to it. But I think at some point we just have to take a step back and realize that it is still a junior tournament. And even though we have a shortened season that only starts in a couple of weeks, it doesn't mean that there's all of a sudden more emphasis on the World Juniors in terms of how important it is. It's fun to watch, and we should take that away from it. And yes, for about 75% of players at the World Juniors, this will be the peak of their career. This will be their highlight, because they will never make it to the NHL or even the AHL. You know, there's college players, and the Rangers have two players on Team USA, two players on Team Canada. That's exciting to watch. And last year we had Nils Lundqvist playing for Sweden with Carl Henriksson, who unfortunately didn't make the team because he tested positive for COVID-19 again. Otherwise, he would have been a first-round center on that team. For fans, just follow your prospects, have fun with it. But it doesn't come close to pro hockey.
Yeah, I would agree. But it is, like you said, a treat for fans to watch, especially when you got these top flight prospects participating in it. And speaking of top flight prospects, the Rangers have four, as you mentioned. Which of the four Rangers prospects are you most excited to see? And which Islanders prospect as well stands out, because they have two that made the tournament?
Yeah, the Islanders, if I remember correctly, they have Rajaniemi for Finland and Holmström for Sweden.
There you go.
Yep. Rajaniemi, a left-handed defenseman, they drafted him this year. I think he will be the most exciting out of the two for Islander fans. Also because I think Finland will be a better team than Sweden. Sweden has lost some players, not just players. They lost their top two centers. They lost most of their coaching staff due to COVID-19. That team has been decimated. So I don't expect much from Sweden, unfortunately. Finland should be exciting to watch. They have Anton Lundell, who was who, in my opinion, should have been a top five pick this year. Some people disagree with me on that, but Anton Lundell should be carrying that team and has a chance to be one of the best players in the tournament. Yeah, for the Rangers, there's Braden Schneider and goalie Dylan Garand for Canada. And for Team USA, Brett Berard, fifth-round pick this year, and Hunter Skinner, fourth-round pick last year. To me, the most exciting out of those four, of course, Schneider as the high pick, as the defenseman, is someone who everyone is looking forward to watching. For me personally, Brett Berard, a fifth-round pick, someone who, in my opinion, could have been a third-round pick, is a really high motor guy who never takes a shift off. He will be exciting to watch for fans because he, in a way, reminds me a little bit of Ryan Callahan. He just keeps going. There's no off switch on the guy.
That's crazy because undersized and he drops two rounds. I saw in the projections a lot of people had him going in the third round. So yeah, it's crazy that he fell. And I think the Rangers got a lot of value in that fifth round in Vierling and Berard, so let's see how he does in this tournament, a big stage for him.
Yeah, and in my opinion, the fifth round with Vierling and Berard is the most exciting part of our draft class, aside from the obvious Lafreniere from overall, of course.
All right, Stefan.
To end it up, so one last question for you. Obviously, we know just Canada's always going to be that juggernaut team, but who's your dark horse in this tournament to, you know, give them a run for their money?
I don't think it's a dark horse, but my favorite to win the tournament is Russia. Russia did something weird a couple of weeks ago. In Europe, they have tournaments. It's called the Euro Hockey Tour. There's four tournaments, one in the Czech Republic, one in Sweden, one in Finland, one in Russia, where all four competing teams play throughout the season. They have four tournaments. And this is men's level. So guys like Joel Lundqvist, who's probably one of the best forwards in the Swedish league, or Nils Lundqvist, who was part of the men's team. This year, Russia did something different. There was a tournament, I think it was the one in Finland. I don't know. I don't remember if it was in Finland or in Sweden. But Russia sent their under-20 team to the men's tournament, and they destroyed all three teams. They won all three games, and it wasn't even close.
Jeez.
Part of this is probably because they played together a little bit more than the other teams. But still, if you send an under-20 team to a men's tournament and they win, that's pretty impressive. And they have, in my opinion, the best goalie prospect in the world in Askarov. Yep. They have some really exciting forwards. Podkolzin is the captain, who was drafted 10th overall by the Canucks. There's the guy Amirov that the Maple Leafs drafted. Kuznudinov, who some Ranger fans were really excited about. Maybe the Rangers would land him as a center prospect. He went to the Minnesota Wild in the second round. I think Russia is going to be my favorite for the tournament. But let's be honest, this is Canada's tournament to win. Canada has had an advantage over every other team with the fact that they didn't have to quarantine 2 weeks before the tournament starts, like every other team flying into Canada. That is a huge advantage to them. They should win this. With or without Lafreniere, they have so many good players on their team. It should be theirs. But if it's not Canada, then it's definitely going to be Russia, in my opinion.
All right. Well, Stephen Fogle, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate the insight. A lot of great European insight there, as well as World Junior Championship coverage. So thank you again for joining us.
All right. Thank you, and have a nice evening.
You too. I'm sure it's late there, so go get some rest.
it's 30 minutes after midnight. I'll go get some sleep now.
All right. Well, you have a good night. Thank you again for joining us.
All right. Bye.
See you.
Everyone go follow him at StatBoy_Steven on Twitter. A lot of great stuff on there. So again, thank you to him for joining us. And Stefan, I mean, we're going to be watching the World Junior Championships avidly, I should say. And I mean, we always root for USA because obviously that's where we are, but it doesn't look like, when you look at the roster comparison, that they can stack up against Canada and Russia.
I mean, he made a great point about the advantage Canada has. And obviously they're going to be a powerhouse every year just because it's Canada. You know, that's their sport there. But, you know, not having to quarantine for 2 weeks is a big thing. And he talked about Russia in the 18th. I mean, that's just, we got to get some Miracle on Ice team to go play them now because they're too cocky. But, I mean, that's the Russian way. They're that talented, that young. They're destroying men. That doesn't mean that they're that skilled I mean, obviously they are, but mature level physically. I mean, you're going against big boys. We talked about Jack Hughes. He dominated. He had a great World Juniors, right? The top. Yeah. But he's not mature enough physically for the NHL. We saw him get bullied around this year. Look at a team like that where, you know, there are young Russian guys going against men. That just shows that, okay, they're skilled and they're also physically mature and ready to go. And that's an advantage, especially when you go against 18-year-olds. If you're ready to go in the NHL right now and you're physically fit for that, you're in a lot better place.
Well, that's one of the aspects of Braden Schneider's game that has a lot of fans excited about, is his physicality and his size is NHL ready. So we will see a couple of players that suit that mold in this World Junior Championships, and I'm excited for that. But let's get back to where we left off before with Henrik Lundqvist. Obviously, he's missing the entirety of the 2021 season. So what are some options that the Capitals have, internal and external? I mean, externally, you have the veterans of Jimmy Howard and Craig Anderson, who I think is going to be in goal for the Capitals as the backup. I think it's going to be one of those two because their AHL options are not entirely up to par.
I mean, you got Phoenix Copley and Vitek Vanacek as your options there in AHL Hershey. If I had to go between Craig Anderson or Jimmy Howard, for me, I think it's Craig Anderson. He's been around, you know, a long time. So is Howard, but you know, you look at Craig Anderson, he was on a bad Ottawa team, and I just think mature level wise, Howard looked terrible. And I get that he was on an abysmal Detroit Red Wings team, abysmal. At the same time, Bernier's numbers weren't as bad. And I think for a guy like Samsonov, you have to have a player that could go in there and actually play and play well if he needs relief. And I trust more in Craig Anderson being able to do that. Even though he's around 40 years old, Jimmy Howard just looks lost. And it's very unfortunate for a guy that's been a staple for the Detroit Red Wings forever. At the same time, though, I just think Craig Anderson could teach him a lot more about, you know, Detroit was a very good team when Howard was there. They were making the playoffs all the time. I think the adversity that Anderson had to go through on a very good Ottawa team, helping that team get very good, to the team he's been on for the last couple of years where they're, you know, bottom feeders. They were so close to making it to the Stanley Cup final a couple of years ago, losing to Pittsburgh. I just think Anderson mentally can help Samsonov grow and become more of a true number one NHL goaltender.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great aspect too. And you could see that the Capitals have this type of mentality now because Lundqvist was brought in to be that veteran guy that can not only give them serviceable minutes, but can help guide Samsonov in the right direction. So that's why if I had to pick on AHL prospects or NHL veteran goalie, you might not get the same type of consistency out of Howard and Craig Anderson at this stage in their careers, but that veteran leadership might do it for the Capitals, especially since you already have guys up front that could score. So they could outscore some of their deficiencies, especially if Samsonov has a little bit of a rough stretch. But in this type of division, any type of rough stretch is going to be hard.
That's the problem. I mean, Samsonov, you know, we talk about how good he is, but his numbers weren't amazing. I think it was like 2.57 or 2.67 goals against, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. And again, Holpe was the number one guy there. So the way Samsonov played just looked so much better because Holpe was just that bad. At the same time, Samsonov was an average netminder last year in the NHL. He's a young guy. So if anything, if it doesn't, this year does not go the way they want, it's going to be a very important learning curve for Samsonov because he's going against, and he's in the hardest division. So you're going to find out right now what he has. And he's going to make improvements throughout the year, but you need, I mean, he's not playing all 56. You need somebody in there that could take the workload off him. If he gets pulled in a game, you know, you need a guy. And I really do believe Craig Anderson is the perfect fit. I'm trying to think of other options out there that would work, but they waited a little too long. They had Lundqvist. They didn't have to get another goalie. And now they're sort of at the short end of the stick with options. But I mean, Craig Anderson, again, he'd probably take a 1-year deal. Howard would take a 1-year deal as well, probably the minimum or a little more. And you see what you got. But Samsonov's going to play the majority of the games anyway, and it's a good learning experience for him.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of signings, right, we have a couple to address. The first is Anthony Duclair, who signs a 1-year contract with Florida. As of the latest I've seen, the financials have not been disclosed yet, but I can't imagine it's a above-average contract, probably in the $1 to $2 million range. But Florida adds a goal-scoring winger who we thought that they would just keep Mike Hoffman. It looks like they're going to go a separate direction from him. And you heard about the Bruins. I saw something on Twitter about the Blues potentially being interested. That would be another weapon that the Blues could add to replace Steen in their lineup. So I do like that fit a lot. But those two teams are already loaded Now imagine if they add Mike Hoffman, who doesn't get the recognition he deserves in this league as being a top flight goal scorer.
No, and his teammate Huberto does not get enough credit for the ability he has as well. But Hoffman's your consistent 25 plus. He's like a Dadonov. Obviously, Dadonov's now with Ottawa. The biggest thing about Hoffman is his struggles to play defense. That's been his biggest problem. Now, the Islanders were linked to him. Everyone's complaining that, okay, well, he doesn't play defense. Talking about Barry Trotz behind the bench, who made Ovechkin, who was just a scorer. That's all he was. He was terrible on defense. Turned him into a two-way player where he uses his physicality. He backchecks, all that kind of stuff. So why couldn't Barry Trotz help that with Hoffman? But finances, obviously, Hoffman's going to – we think he's going to ask for a good amount of money. But Duclair, it's a great signing. Florida needed it. It wasn't like – they were also running out of options. They needed somebody because if Hoffman leaves, Dadonov leaves, you need a winger. And while I think Duclair – I know Duclair asked for – they were way off with his talks with Ottawa, where Ottawa thought he was worth and where he thought he was worth. And I think he made the mistake by representing himself.
Correct.
I think he misread the market, and I think that this would be the time to go back to Ottawa because of the young talent they have. They bring him down enough. Duclair is one of those guys that could play on the penalty kill very fast. They were linking him to the Islanders to play alongside Pageau again. But I think this is a good signing for Florida because if they went through this free agency and did not sign a winger, I mean, Duclair could be a bust for all I know with Florida. He could have a down year again. He played for an Ottawa team where it was guns blazing on offense and he put up good numbers. But you look at Pageau, who put up great numbers with Ottawa, comes the Islanders. Not saying he can't put up great numbers, but now he's playing third line minutes in a defensive based system. Now Florida is a little bit different, but Florida's thing in the playoffs was offense and the defense was shaky and the Islanders brought it to them. So Duclair is going to help them fill the hole that Dadonov and Hoffman left behind if Hoffman doesn't sign back, but that's a big hole to fill.
It is. And you talked about him representing himself. This was probably the worst free agency to do that because of the circumstances. Forget the flat cap because of COVID. We also had uncertainty of when the season would start. Teams didn't want to spend. They didn't know if we'd be playing, where we'd be playing, all that stuff. So probably not a great idea, but hey, give him credit. He did. He wound up getting a contract, so he did better than I could do representing somebody right now in the NHL. So kudos to him for that. But another signing that happened was Connor Sheary. This just happened today. He signed with the Capitals for $900K. And guess what? That $900K was cleared in cap because Henrik Lundqvist will not be playing with the team this year. So they have a couple of roster maneuverability situations they could have done there. And they signed Connor Sheary, who he's won, right? He got that pedigree. He joins the Capitals team that likes those depth forwards and needs those depth forwards because their depth has been questioned over the last couple of seasons. After winning the Cup, they've slowly deteriorated, gone the opposite direction. But this is their last hoorah, their last chance at getting back to that promised land.
You speak about depth, and against the Islanders in the playoffs, the depth wasn't there. Three players for the cap squad. I'm pretty sure, if I can remember, it was Kuznetsov, Ovechkin, I think Wilson. I could be wrong. No, I think it was Oshie. That was the only three players to score. And they lost the series. So this is a great depth signing. Last year wasn't a great year for Sheary. Split between Buffalo and Pittsburgh. That was his second stint back with Pittsburgh after being traded a couple years ago. He had 10 goals and 13 assists, so that's 23 points. But he's one of those guys that, again, you're looking at the Capitals teams, and their top two lines are very strong. He might be a third-line guy going against the bottom defense pairing, and he could explode. He had great seasons with the Penguins. He was clutch as well, so it's a great signing. And even with Buffalo too, he did solid. And I think this is one of those guys that is going to take advantage of the market because yes, he signed real cheap, but I'm assuming he's banking on himself. I think, what is he? 20. He's 28 years old. This is a great year, especially in a shortened year. We'll get playing time. Obviously he's going to be in that starting lineup every night. Showcase what he's got. That way he gets a much higher contract. Cause I think 900K for him, you know, given his stats is probably around what he's worth, but he could do a lot better than what he did last year.
Yeah, he's a depth player, right? We saw Carl Hagelin went there a couple of seasons ago. They won a cup, and that's the type of player they're looking for. Somebody that can kill penalties, you know, can contribute offensively, but is a responsible two-way forward. So he's not big. He's not the biggest guy, but he plays that type of game where it's gritty. So it's a good ad for the Caps and a team that lacks, upper echelon defensive talent outside of John Carlson. They need forward help, forwards that can get back. So I like that addition, and I think with that, we've touched on enough league stuff. It's time to dive into some hometown stuff, right?
One more thing, though. You mentioned Alexander Steen. Congratulations, Alexander Steen, to your career. And I'm so sorry the St. Louis Blues tweeted out the wrong stat. I text this kid, Brendan, and I go, Brendan, these stats don't add up. I forget what it was. I think it was 494 they tweeted out points. And he had over that in his career. I think he had 600 and something, and they just read the wrong stat. They read his penalty minutes for his career. It's unfortunate. They didn't take the post down, but it showed Alexander Steen being a less player than he was. Cup winner. And despite not, you know, being that star, he was a consistent guy in the locker room. He was a leader. He did the little things in the rink that we always talk about that Stanley Cup winning teams need. Those guys that go under the radar and just do what they have to do to help their team win. It's going to be a great career. Unfortunately, he had to retire due to an injury. I think it was back.
I believe so. Yeah.
Back. And again, we talked about Boychuk earlier when he announced retirement. It sucks when you can't, you know, you can't retire on your own terms, but we wish nothing but the best for Alexander Steen.
Well said. And we mentioned it, but we didn't acknowledge it. And you're right. I mean, that's a great career for him, and he got his cup. So he winds up retiring happy. I know it's not on his terms, but still a happy retirement for him, and we wish him the best after hockey, which I'm sure he'll find a way to stay in hockey. That's just what happens. But for hometown hockey now, the NHL announced that 3 goalies per team have to be with the team traveling at all times. Now, normally teams go, okay, we got 1, maybe 2 serviceable ones, and guess what? The Rangers and Islanders both have 3, with the addition of Corey Schneider for the New York Islanders and Keith Kincaid for the Rangers. So
that's fine.
It is funny, right? Yeah. It really is. The Devils and Islanders and Rangers are trading goalies around. But when the Rangers signed Keith Kincaid, it was for one reason only. It was for a option in the expansion draft, because you don't have to expose Shesterkin, and they have to protect Georgiev. So now they can release Kincaid. But now it winds up being good, because if somebody like a Georgiev or Shesterkin does get COVID, you have an NHL-ready backup.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about for the Islanders, they didn't sign Schneider yet, but that's it's a done deal. Again, we talk about the biggest thing is Barzal is still not signed. Now, granted, he's got less than a month to sign. The season starts in less than a month, the 13th. They have to report about 2 weeks or 10 days beforehand. I cannot see this going into that time frame. I think he'll be signed, let's say a New Year's signing, Brendan.
Okay.
Maybe Christmas. You know, I mean, you know, that would be great. A lot of Christmas gifts. Obviously, I'm Jewish, so I'll take the Christmas present, though. I'll take it. But once he signs, the dominoes will fall with the other guys that need to be signed. But like I said, so the Islanders, it's easy. Sorokin, Varlamov, Schneider. They have Skarik in the minors. But he's 21 years old. He's not ready. For a guy like Sorokin, I want him surrounded by as much veteran presence as physically possible. Now, Varlamov was brought here for the one main reason was to get him acclimated to NHL life, both from the same country, to help him get acclimated. And Schneider is one of those guys that, yes, he's trying to resurrect his career. He has stuff left in the tank. Lamoriello knows him. Lamoriello acquired him from Vancouver. It didn't work out, but Lamoriello believes in what Schneider has. And to have another veteran presence, and again, Schneider's not going to play often. It's if someone gets hurt. But the big thing is just, you know, Schneider could watch Sorokin's game and give him those little tips here and there, where a guy like Skarik is learning from Sorokin. It's not going to go that way. So I think it's very important to sandwich him with veterans. Bring back Andy Green. Yes, Andy Green's not a goaltender. At the same time, Andy Green's a very good defensive defenseman, and he can give Sorokin tips as well on how it all played, because this is different for him. He's playing overseas for the most part. He comes to NHL. Andy Green's been one of the most stable NHL defensemen throughout his career, playing first-line minutes, and his beard's as gray as gold. Yeah. So this is a guy that definitely understands the game and could help a guy like Sorokin. So I think, you know, Sorokin, Varlamov, Schneider is the plan. Schneider will be signed as soon as Barzal is signed.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, we're going to see that trickle down effect very soon. But before we get back into some, well, I guess you did touch on all the Islander stuff you had with Matt Barzal there. I mean, he's got to get signed, right? Just at some point, you assume over the next week it's going to happen, because training camp starts at 3rd, right?
Exactly. So I think it's been done. I think it's done. I don't think the pens hit the paper, but I think that with the Boychuk, you know, deciding what's happening with him, the money's technically not there yet. I think it would be $9 million or so, because $6 million and they have 3.9, so 9.9. So the money's going to be there. I think they're trying to work out the logistics, but I have a feeling that Lamoriello and Barzal's agent have already signed a deal, or at least have a mutual agreement on, okay, we're doing this, we're doing this. Once the money's available, please sign the dotted line here, Matt Barzal. And I think he's going to do it. So, I mean, he better do it at this point if he's waited this long. But, I mean, that's the biggest thing for the Islanders. It's we can't really get set for how we want to do everything until that happens, because the question becomes, like we say it every week, all right, Barzal signs. Does Matt Martin come back? That changes everything for the fourth line. The third line has holes. Who's playing alongside Pageau on both sides? Well, if Martin comes back, Ross Johnson can now fill one of those holes. But if Matt Martin doesn't come back, Ross Johnson hits the fourth line. Okay, now we got to go with Kiefer Bellows, Anna Wahlstrom, or Dal Cole, or the guy they traded for, who I'm blanking right now. So I think it's Timoshov. Timoshov from Detroit?
Yeah. You're right, yep.
Yeah, so is he going to play a role? The biggest thing is, though, okay, we got to see how much money we have left once Barzal signs, because it depends how much he asks for. I'm assuming it'll be a team-friendlier deal, given the fact that I guarantee he wants to see Matt Martin back. He wants to see guys like Andy Green back. I mean, they built a huge bond. Yes, since Barzal has been on the team, he's teammates, whatever, bonding. But the bubble life, making it so close, this is the unit you want. And this Islander team, EJ Raddick just talked about the Islanders, and he ranked them to win this division. Well, I love EJ Raddick for that. I want to give him a big hug. To me, I don't think that's going to be the case. But again, it comes down to these little signings. I mean, you look at the Islanders, and it's all about rolling four lines. That, you know, Trotz loves to put every line out there in every situation. And if you lose one of those guys like a Matt Martin to solidify a fourth line, that does change everything. So hopefully Barzal signs soon enough. That way Matt Martin could sign. That way Andy Green could sign his depth. And this team could look like the team they were last year.
Well, Matt Martin and Matt Barzal, if they don't get signed, you could kiss EJ Raddick's number one ranking in the division goodbye. But, I mean, people were texting me all day about that, how could the Islanders get ranked one? They went to the Eastern Conference Final last year, so they have to have some respect on their name. I mean, people released the what happened?
I said you would think.
I mean, people released the betting odds, and they were not as high as I thought they would be, considering how far they went. They're built for the playoffs, but I guess they're built to get in and not necessarily win the division. So, I mean, they shouldn't be the favorite, but I do think that they're going to get in. So where they wind up just depends on how well they play against the teams in their division. That's really it this year. So we'll see how that works. But with some Ranger news to get into, Keandre Miller posted on his Instagram story, him and Alexei Lafreniere working out together, which is just like a Christmas miracle for Rangers fans, something we never thought we would see once COVID hit. But here they are, two of the Rangers, top 10 prize prospects, with Lafreniere obviously being the number one, and Keandre Miller hopes to make an impact on the back end sooner rather than later. So the more that they get some camaraderie together and can build that at the NHL level, it'll be huge for this team. I mean, Keandre Miller is literally huge. I think he's 6'5", 210 pounds, a big guy, only getting bigger, transitioned from forward back to defense, and was a first-round pick at a defenseman. So you know how skilled he is. And Lafreniere, we know what he could bring. So the two of them maybe do some one-on-ones, and Miller's defensive ability will increase, because when he played against Lafreniere in the World Juniors, Lafreniere was the only one that really embarrassed Keandre Miller.
I mean, it's never too early to start building chemistry. Well, Keandre Miller might be a couple of years. You'd think next year would probably be his year he breaks in, if not this year. But, you know, it's definitely good to have these young guys working out together, because they learn from each other. Like you said, they're one-on-one battles, all that kind of stuff. It's only going to make Keandre Miller better. And it's, Lafreniere is going to go against a top defenseman. He's going to have to pull out some new tricks. It's only going to make him better. So perfect to see this happening. I assume many other teams you see prospects working out together. Just Keandre Miller posted it to Instagram, and Ranger fans are very, very happy about that.
They are. And lastly, the Islanders are ranked one in EJ Raddick's, division, the East Division rankings. And the NHL Network was doing their top 50 player rankings, and they ranked Mika Zibanejad 22nd, ahead of Alexander Barkov and Mikko Rantanen. And when you think of those two names, and Barkov and Rantanen, you think of elite players in the league. And now Zibanejad's been ranked ahead of them based on what he's done over the last two seasons. And when I look at that, I mean, I can't really question it. The goals per game's there. The assists are there. They're only going up. He's missed time with injury, so his numbers would be even better. I think it's cool to see that he's finally getting the recognition that he deserves, because even last year, before last season, I should say, Rangers fans were calling for somebody to say, hey, this guy is a top-flight center. He might not be top 10 yet, but look at what he's doing in a team that's really decimated, right? And then all of a sudden they get Panarin. He still remains on the first line. He basically bumps Panarin to line two, and still puts up 41 and 57 games.
Ottawa just has to be so embarrassed. I mean, that organization is such a – just the things they do. But for the Rangers, I mean, it's so well-deserved. Because every time you put on a Ranger game last year, whether they won the game or lost, Zibanejad was never a negative. He was never a negative. He was that guy that tried to put his team on his back every single game. And he's an absolute beast. And, I mean, you look at those names. Rantanen and Barkov, superstars. Barkov's unreal talent. Rantanen is a beautiful sniper. He's so elite. They're just those names and the fact that Zibanejad is ahead of them, not even close behind them, ahead of them, is well deserved. And I think that, you know, for the Rangers, you have a guy like Panarin, and they just think, okay, that's it. That's the star of the team. But you got like a pairing right there that is going to make this Rangers team very, very good this year, because I just think that these two guys are going to help get this. If the Rangers are going to make the playoffs, we think their defense is going to be better. But at the same time, this offense is going to have to shine. And Zibanejad, like you said, his assists are going up. And when he plays, you know, just this unit is so good. This offensive weapons that the Rangers have, he's only going to get better. And that's not a knock on Barkov and Rantanen. If they see this and go, oh, really? It's like, oh, wow, he really is that good. Because they know how good they are. I mean, it's not a joke. Zibanejad knows how good he is as well. So great for him to see. And this is probably going to make him work much more harder this season as well, because he wants to stay there.
Yeah, I completely agree. And listen, I think that this season he's going to take another step, right? We talked about his pace. His pace was 57 games. So it's only one off from what they'll be playing this year if he can stay fully healthy, which Rangers fans really hope he can. There's no reason he can't get upwards of 35 goals again, especially with the talent around him. And it's not like anybody left, right? They just added. So interesting to see how he will fare. But I think it's time to go into this date in hockey history, because we usually have good ones, but I mean, we got a long one this week and a lot of crazy stuff. So our little NHL rewind action right now. And do you want to kick things off with Jaromír Jágr?
Yeah, I will. We're going to go out of order date wise. Let's just confuse people as much as possible. So, December 22nd, Jaromír Jágr of the Florida Panthers passes Mark Messier and moves into second place on the NHL's all-time scoring list, trailing only Wayne Gretzky, 2,857 points. Puck cams off his body in front. Barkov, who we spoke about, finishes it off. So that's how he gets that point there. And for a guy like Jágr, I mean, this is what you expect.
Yeah, the good old booty pass.
Next, December 22nd, 1974, Phil Esposito becomes the sixth player in NHL history with 500 goals when he scores twice in the second period for the Boston Bruins in a 5-4 victory against the Detroit Red Wings at Boston Garden. Esposito scored a shorthanded goal and a power play goal. So special teams right there.
Phil Esposito was a pretty good player. So, I mean, no doubt that he's on the score sheet there. And 1974, man, it's crazy how much the game's evolved and how long it's been around. But
wait for the next one. 1979, the Philadelphia Flyers extended their undefeated streak to an NHL record 29 games, 20 wins, 9 ties, with a 5-2 victory against the Bruins at Boston Garden. It just seems to be happening to the Bruins. The Flyers surpassed the previous mark of 28 games without a loss set by the 1977-1978 Montreal Canadiens. They extended their streak to 35 games, 25 wins, 10 ties, before losing to the Minnesota North Stars on January 7th, 1980.
Well, I think we're on a streak here with 3 straight weeks of having some team having an unbeaten streak in our NHL rewind. I mean, this is the third one that I could think of in 35 games. That's crazy.
Take the next one.
That's a long time. If you have 35 game streak this year, oh my God, you're going to the postseason.
Yeah, you definitely are.
December 22nd, 1990, Paul Coffey of the Pittsburgh Penguins becomes the second defenseman in NHL history with 1,000 points in his career. He reaches the milestone with a second period assist on a goal by Kevin Stevens during a 4-3 win against the New York Islanders at Nassau Coliseum. Another legendary name in Paul Coffey, 1,000 points in his career as a defenseman. Not a small feat by any means.
Yep. Moving on, 1993, Dean Evason scores a shorthanded goal at 3:20 of overtime to give the Dallas Stars a 3-2 victory against the Anaheim Ducks at Arrowhead Pond. It's the first shorthanded goal scored in overtime since the NHL adopts the 5-minute overtime period in 1983. That's pretty cool. That's a fun fact you should know for nothing, but just know it. So Dean Evason scores the first overtime goal when that new rule was put into place. That's pretty cool.
The fans' emotions that night must have been crazy. A penalty in OT, you go, oh no, here we go, we're going to lose. Next thing you know, it's a shorty in the back of the net. You're celebrating. All right, December 22nd.
Fans at games, Brandon?
Listen, seems like a foreign thought. I get my Snapchat memories. I see fans at games, like my games at the Garden. I'm going, wow. I went 0-7 last year at the freaking Ranger games, okay? 0-7. I don't want this to end. Like, somebody's got to get me back to a game so I could get a win under my belt and go on a happy note. 7 straight losses.
You should probably just stop going.
I did. We all did. What do you think? I started COVID because I went 0-7.
Oh, jeez.
December 22nd, 1996, Brett Hull joins his father, Bobby Hull, in the NHL's 500-goal club when he scores three times for the St. Louis Blues in a 7-4 victory against the visiting Los Angeles Kings. It looks like Brett Hull gets his 500th goal 20 seconds into the third period, but it's taken away after about 5 minutes later when video shows the puck actually goes into the net off the leg of teammate Stefan Matteau. Great name, great guy. No matter, Hull beats goaltender Stefan Fassette at 10:25 to complete his hat trick and become the 24th player in NHL history to score 500 goals. The Hulls are the first father-son tandem to each score 500. Wow.
He probably got a standing ovation for that goal.
Twice.
And yeah, twice. And they're like, oh, it's not a goal. And then he gets it again. I got it for the crowd. The crowd went absolutely wild. So let's cap this off. Ron Francis, a name we know very well, joins Gretzky as the only player in NHL history with 1,200 career assists when he sets up Jeff O'Neill's goal midway through the third period of the Carolina Hurricanes' 1-0 victory against the visiting Stars. Francis finishes his NHL career with 1,249 assists, second to Gretzky's 1,963. That was 2002.
I mean, the disparity is just unreal. But Ron Francis, great career, great career as a GM as well. And all these are courtesy of NHL.com. So I just amazing stuff for our last show of the year and our last BS sports show, which is crazy to think about.
Well, what's crazy is that we've done 30 of these. So you would think it's like 30 weeks. But it's been a lot of fun, Brendan, and I cannot wait to show everybody the new look that we will have come the new year. We got a great guest lined up for week one. You guys are going to love it. I'll give you a hint. It's from a hockey movie. So, Brendan, though, like, what was your favorite, you know, experience with the BS Sports Show? Obviously, we're not going anywhere. It's going to be the same guys here. You know, we're going to try to get the great guests that we usually get.
Yep.
But favorite moment, Brendan?
Yeah, I mean, you said it best. It's not a new show. It's just a new name and new logo, which Rangers and Islanders fans should love. It looks great. It's coming out great so far. But my favorite moment has to be when we got Steve Cangelosi on. We hadn't had this many viewers, the amount of viewers we get now. We hadn't established ourselves on social media yet, but you reached out to him. He came on. Great guy. And just, I remember our faces when he said his answered his first question, and it was like he was broadcasting his answer to us, how we were just like, oh God, we hear this guy's voice every single day on TV. So that to me, just how surreal that was, probably my favorite moment so far, but there's so many of them.
I mean, yeah. Talking to him is like watching a devil game. Cause he just, that's how they speak. Is you think it's an act sometimes, you know, I've talked to some guys and they say, yeah, you know, you got to change your voice like this. Do that. Not that's, I talked to him on the phone to ask for advice. Great guy. But I was talking to I was like, am I on DVR right now? What am I listening to?
All we needed was Ken Danico next to him. We'd had the full broadcast.
No, it was great. That's a great experience. But for me, it's, you know, having Jameson Coyle on. We had him on really early, and he has been a guy that has supported not just the show, but me throughout my growth as I try to grow on Twitter. He's liking tweets here and there. He's always a guy that I could reach out to and ask for advice. And he's a class act on the NHL Network. He does a great job. And having a guy on like that really showed me, hey, you know, we get guys like that to come on this show. And especially hockey, you know, that this is an NHL Network host. And we're just two guys that love hockey. And we talked that we were best friends forever, making bets, you know, playing video games. I've texted him a few times, let's play chill. It's been great. But you just look at it and it's like, doesn't matter. He's not too big to hang with us and talk to us. And that's something that I really take to heart when hopefully if we become big one day, we look back and go, let's reach out to those young guys and help them out. So it's just awesome to see a guy like Jameson Coyle willing to come onto the show, talk to us about his experience. And we took a lot from that.
We really did. And like you said, it was awesome that he was just willing to talk to us like that. And guess what? It's now hockey's about to start back up. Once you hear his voice on NHL Tonight saying, all right, we're going over highlights, you know you're back in hockey season. So it's a great time. And every time I see him on TV, I'm like, hey, we talked to this guy. So it's just a cool experience that we got to have. And hopefully he comes on again another time soon. I know he's busy right now, but we'd love to have him back on.
Yeah, I mean, EJ Raddick, too, another great guy. I met him in the bathroom at NHL Network once. He did say hi, like, what's up, how's it going? I was like, what's up? And that was it. It was 5 seconds, but very nice guy. And we saw his rankings. So
I hope you did proper protocol in the bathroom where you don't go right next to him.
Oh, no. I was walking out. He was walking, and I held the door for him.
All right, that's better. Because, I mean, I don't think we could ever get him on if you just stood right next to him.
Yeah, no, that probably, he probably remembered that. And that was 2 years ago, a 2-second interaction there.
Well, I mean, this is our last episode of the year, and it's our last BS Sports Show because of the name change and everything. But it's crazy how during this whole entire year, right, you know, everything stopped. We were at college in March thinking we're going on spring break, and all of a sudden we're home and everything's canceled. I remember I was on a gym at the I was in the gym on a bike at Cortland watching Cuomo say he's closing schools. And I'm like, all right, this. I went up to the TV, smacked a little bit, saying the captioning on this got to be off. He's not closing us down. But he did, and this came out of it, so could be worse.
It could be worse. I mean, it's therapeutic. Getting to talk hockey, I mean, obviously one of my best friends here, so talking hockey with you each week is just, you know, we get to escape reality for a little bit, for an hour, 2 hours, talk to some great guys, but we love hockey. We eat, sleep, breathe, play hockey, and the fact that, you know, I've been hurt, so I haven't been able to play, and just being able to talk about the sport gets me so amped up. Thank God it's back, and when we talk to you guys next, we'll be rolling out. It'll be a week before the season begins, and we're going to have a lot more to talk about then. Hopefully it's above all. If there's a ball sending by then, oh boy, oh boy. But there will be, and we'll have a lot more things to talk about.
So the first episode of the new show is January 6th. That's the date. Circle it on your calendars. January 6th, we'll be here with a great guest talking hockey. Obviously, we're going to talk about, we're a week away from the season on January 6th, which is just crazy to think about that we're getting there. Everyone's going to have a good New Year's, good holidays, and then we're going to have the new show coming out. Can't wait for that on January 1st, releasing everything. But we're not just releasing one logo or one new name. We're releasing a whole entire thing here where we have the BS Sports After Dark, right? Or BSing After Dark. We're going to be playing Chell together, and we have one of our other buddies, Trevor Evans, coming on with us, and we're just going to be talking, right? And it's not going to be clean or live. It's going to be released as a podcast, so it's for 18-plus audiences, but it's just going to be us talking, playing Chell, you know, regular guy stuff. And if hopefully that takes off just because we're BSing around, as we should say. But we're going to put social media content out there, all that stuff. It's going to be a full initiative just to get this going off the ground because we love doing it. So why not put effort into it, right?
And I'm going to be unemployed, so I have all the time in the world to get this stuff going. But for everybody that has tuned in from when we started to now, I mean, we never expected to get the views that we were getting. And again, it's not to us, it wasn't about the views. We just want to do this for a career. And we know during COVID, rather than sit back and do nothing and collect unemployment or, you know, cry, we went out and did something. We started this. This is not the first show we've done. We've done a couple, but we got to do a live show. We were part of a great network. And now we move on. So I can't wait to see what the new year has in store. Everyone has got that those resolutions. And for us, it's about making as much great content as physically possible for you guys through talking sports, playing hockey, all that kind of stuff. And we hope that you stay along for the new ride.
I mean, it's going to be fun.
Oh, it's going to be fun for sure. I can't wait.
I'm amped up for it. I'm amped up for New Year's, right? Because just to get this year in the rearview mirror, let's go. All for it. Do not want to see 2020 on our dates anymore. I want to break my phone screen every time I see 2020 on it. But at the same time, we're going to get to 2021. As soon as that clock turns, me and you are the first thing that's going through our head outside of Happy New Year and toasting with our champagne is, oh, today's the day we released the logo. Let's go. We're going to be amped for it. It's going to be just a great experience. Just rebranding. We've done it twice now, right? We used to be the S&P show. Then we switched to the BS Sports Show. And now our next name, no letters in it, right? It's a real name, real logo, real legit show. And it's exciting.
And we will check back with you on January 1st with the logo and the new name. And we'll see you guys then. Thanks everybody so much. And we'll see you January 6th.
Have a nice holidays.
Happy holidays to everybody. Happy New Year. Stay safe.